I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. This episode contains explicit language.
I hate peanut butter so much. So
really?
Sometimes I tell people I'm allergic just so I don't have to talk about it. You know what I mean? Because it's like that thing where people are like, well, I'm a hugger. And you're like, well, I just said I don't want to be touched. Like, I don't like peanut butter. I'm like, well, you haven't had my peanut butter. I'm like, that's not how it works. I don't like it.
That's amazing. I'm fueled by peanut butter.
I mean, that's people who like peanut butter, as I've learned, really like peanut butter. It's like, is it a religion? Did it raise you?
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. And joining me this week to chat and later to help settle some of your food-related disputes are the hosts of the podcast Vibe Check. We have poet and writer Saeed Jones.
Hi.
Journalist and Tony Award-winning producer Zach Stafford.
Hello.
And journalist and podcaster Sam Sanders.
Hi.
And what I love about the show is the range of topics. I mean, you guys talk about pop culture, music, but also news. I mean, you've addressed the Oscars and the news show Swarm, but also the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, the train derailment in Ohio. So a lot of ground, but that's kind of what it's like when longtime friends hang out and chat. You're all longtime friends, and this show is like taking your group chat and putting it on a podcast.
Yeah. What I love is that on any given day in this group chat that becomes the show, I leave my phone for 2 hours. I come back to like 78 texts from my two sisters. But it's like full of ideas and links and thoughts. And it's like, oh, this feels meaty. Yeah. And that's the joy of it.
Yeah. We, you know, the big thing is we created this space in the middle of the pandemic to be a place where you could like kick the tires, say the things you may not want to tweet yet. So it becomes kind of this like, practice field for us to be like, oh, I'm thinking through this, or the beginnings of an idea when you really need to suss it out. We suss it out together. And then maybe it ends up on Twitter. Saeed Jones would be the fastest to put it on Twitter.
I'm tweeting right now. By tweeting this very recording. Yeah. Also, we're some funny bitches, I know.
And that, yes.
You know, I know better than to be one of those people like, oh, I could do stand-up. I'm like, no, we are not doing stand up, but we're pretty funny.
We're podcast funny. We're podcast funny.
So thoughtfulness, sometimes disagreement, different ideas, wading through different kinds of disputes and big and small concepts. These are the things you do on Vibe Check, and I think it makes you well suited to come and hang out here on the Sporkful for a little bit. Let's the four of us chat about food a little bit, get your bearings on food, and then we're going to take some calls, hear from some listeners, and you can help to share some of your skills with them, and maybe we can help some folks out there who are having some disagreements of their own.
Yeah.
Zach, I understand you and your partner, Craig, have gotten into meal prepping recently.
Yeah. Oh, of course he would.
I was like, wow.
Let me tell you something about that.
He's going to be so happy that this is being talked about.
Zach is such an A-plus student.
True.
This man does CrossFit every morning, prepping the meals.
I'm really annoying.
Expose her.
Yeah. Yeah, so to your question, I have begun meal prepping. What would you like to know, Dan?
What would you... if you're such a type A and A plus student, why has it taken you this long to start meal prep?
Okay, that's a very good question. So I've historically meal prepped a lot, but when you're falling in love and you're dating, so we've been together for a few years now, but we were living between New York and LA and we're traveling all the time, that, you know, there's some romanticism in going out to eat and like going out and trying food and exploring things. But then you hit a point in your relationship where you're like, girl, I've gained 5 pounds. Girl, I want to sit at home. Girl, I don't want to go out another time because it's really expensive. And then you realize meal prepping can be a really great weekly activity that you do together to kind of like set the week, set your intentions, talk about food. Because I remember I grew up loving food. I grew up working in restaurants. I worked in the back of a kitchen and did prep cooking. And I did some like whatever, a lot of things. And I realized at a young age that grocery shopping can be some of the most intimate things you do with someone else. Like to walk through a store and see what they pull for their week to eat when they're happy, to eat when they're sad.
I believe that. You can learn a lot about a person by...
Okay, that's true. It's true.
Tell me something you learned about Craig that you didn't know about him by going grocery shopping with him.
Canned chicken. That's what I learned about Craig. So, I did not know. Yes, canned chicken. It's very Midwest. And I'm sure he can hear me and he's in the house right now. So I'm really anxious about this. But no, canned chicken was a big moment for us in our grocery shopping.
I'm literally trying to, like canned tuna?
Yeah.
Saeed looks so confused.
It is canned tuna. So it's just tuna is canned and then there's chicken that's canned. It's wet. It can stay around forever and ever and ever. And, you know,
Dark meat or white meat? Sorry, I'm very curious.
It's white meat. I don't know, actually. It probably is all meat, okay. Just left over. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I should look. But I never grew up eating canned chicken, like, at all. Like, we, like, made chicken. If you wanted chicken, you froze it, sure, but you didn't can it. He is, you know, Midwestern, also lived in Utah. He's ex-Mormon. His family still practices Mormonism. And they're big into food storage and keeping a lot of food. So this moment of tension when he pulled out canned chicken at the store and then brought it home and then tried to make dishes out of it. I was like, what the hell is
going on? Like a casserole or what? Yeah,
no, like actual like meal prepping. Like you have like chicken and rice and chicken and vegetables. Oh. So I was just like, what is going on? And you know, food and shopping and then cooking, you learn a lot about where you come from and where you're going to with each other. So yeah, canned chicken was a big aha when we moved in together. That kind of defined this meal prep for us. Yeah.
Wow. And how long ago was that big moment in the grocery
that
store, roughly?
That was last summer, the big aha.
So 9 months ago, give or take.
Yeah, good math, yeah.
And where are you at with the canned chicken in your relationship today?
We don't really cook with canned chicken anymore.
Okay. Dan, you are good. Okay, I see you, bitch.
Yes.
Uh-huh, this is an interviewer. Yeah. Yes.
Canned chicken Craig. Yeah. Wow. Canned chicken Craig.
But we do have it in the house in case, you know, the apocalypse happens.
Wow.
I also love, Zach, I love that you've identified a point in a relationship when you go from like, oh, we're in the restaurant phase to we're in the meal prep phase.
Yes, and it is a moment in which you move in together or you're just always together. And it is a good moment of, you know, flagging to each other. Like, I'm here for the long haul. I want to like plan with you and think about my life with you. Food and food shopping and food prepping is a way to do that. So I do advise people, if you're in that place in your relationship, give it a try, like make some meals together and plan some meals together. Cause then you're talking about your whole week.
So Zach, canned chicken aside, tell me one meal prep dish that you would put together that's one of your very favorites.
Oh my God. I just was eating it as we began. We have begun making these breakfast sandwiches that are just so great and they're frozen. So what we do, they're like English muffins, fresh turkey patties, turkey bacon, an egg frittata, and some cheese. He's on, you know, egg duty and I'm on meat duty. So we're like preparing them side by side because you're making, you know, 12 to 24. And it's just like an assembly line. And it really plays into my like type A-ness growing up in kitchens because we just like run it like a kitchen. The key to these frozen sandwiches, which I learned through him, is you're supposed to dampen napkins and wrap the sandwich in the napkin and then put aluminum foil around it. So then when you freeze it, the napkin freezes around it. So when you microwave it, it moistens it as it's heating up.
Here's my question. Are y'all like, while you're doing this meal prep, are you listening to, like, are you like, you know, playing Anita Baker and chit-chatting? Yeah, or is it like, because part of me, I'm like, this sounds like an episode of The Bear.
Which I would love. I'm like, yeah, let's role play kitchen. Yes, chef. Yeah, I'm into that. Yeah. No, it's not that serious. We do it Sunday, so there's music playing.
Okay.
Or we'll be watching a show that we're interested in, but like not needing to sit down. So we'll like have it playing.
Saeed, you moved to Columbus, Ohio a few years back.
2019, yep.
And among other things, I understand this move helped you to develop a love of tailgating.
It did.
So what was your relationship with tailgating before moving to Ohio?
Yeah, it's almost allowed me to maybe reclaim or reset my relationship with tailgating, because I grew up in North Texas where football, is just a really important part of culture. Like, to not be a part of football is to not be a part of civil society in Texas to a certain extent. But the tailgating culture, all of that, you know, was associated with all of the, with many of the toxic, you know, issues that I was like, you know, just really struggling to survive. So there wasn't any joy there. You know, it was a very aggressive, bro, white, you know, just creepy space for me. I didn't feel safe. And I certainly didn't feel like I was having fun. And then I moved to Columbus, Ohio, and shit ain't sweet. I'm not trying to romanticize college football or anything like that, but there was just like a levity. Maybe it was, you know, that I did not grow up here. And so I was able to just kind of show up, you know, as an adult, I'm more confident in myself and in these spaces. But I don't know. I just love it. I love just, you know, grabbing a beer or a vodka cranberry and pretending to care about football.
And correct me, Syed, if I recall correctly, you sometimes leave before the game starts.
I always do. My boyfriend is from Australia, and he, you know, he came tailgating with me last fall, and he was like, okay, so we need to get tickets. What do we do? And I was like, oh, honey, no. No. I was like, we're going to get some drinks, have a good time, meet up with some friends.
You mentioned a couple of your favorite tailgating drinks, mm-hmm. Saeed. Do you have a couple of favorite tailgating foods?
I love a hot dog. I get irritated with, like, the way American food culture always wants to, like, add a little special oomph to justify American classics. It's too much. I just want it very simple, literally just ketchup and mustard, you know, good bread, whatever.
Sam, I know that you're a big proponent of Jenny's ice cream, which comes from Columbus, right?
Yes. And I think what I love the most, so my favorite flavor of theirs is the brown butter almond brittle.
That's very good.
And I like a lot of their flavors, but it is rare that you can find the thing that you can get in the grocery store that is mass produced that tastes that good and that fresh. It tastes like someone just made it with 5 ingredients next door to me, you know? And it's one of the few foods where every time I take the first bite of that pint, I make a noise still. I'll be like, oh.
It takes your breath away.
It really does. The mouthfeel of Jenny's is so much more substantive than any other ice cream. And the flavors just hit, man. Oh, I love it.
Jenny's has it was a limited edition just last summer. I don't know if it was the first time they did it, but it was the first time I encountered it, that I experienced this flavor. It was their wedding cake. Oh, my God.
Oh, I didn't get to try that one.
It feels one-to-one without it feeling like they just shoved a wedding cake into a pie. You know, I don't know how to explain that, but it's, ooh.
And Jenny's, every flavor that I like of theirs, I want to finish the whole pint. Mm-hmm. I want to finish the entire pint.
Yeah. Yes, it's very hard to stop.
I grew up in Texas in a Bluebell ice cream family.
Bluebell Nation.
And that was like our religion. Mm-hmm. It was our religion. Yeah. So to ever even mention another ice cream is a big deal for me, but I will take Jenny's over Bluebell. Fight me any day.
That's very good.
And it feels like Jenny's, in a very good way, it feels denser and more substantive than any other ice cream I've had. There's a fullness to it, the fullness of the mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. Dan, what is the reason for that? There's got to be a reason for that.
It's called overrun. Oh. And when you make ice cream, you incorporate a certain amount of air into it. And different brands put a different percentage of air into their ice cream. That's why, like, the cheaper, like, sort of supermarket ones that come
fluffy.
In the big tubs, they're fluffy, right? It's because they literally do have more air inside the ice cream.
So then it's just like, no air up in this motherfucker. It's going
to
be dense.
Right, exactly, right. So the more upscale brands tend to use less overrun, which is why they're so rich and creamy.
Wow. The more you know.
I've talked to Jenny, and the first time I met her, we had dinner.
Wait, Saeed, you actually met the Jenny from Jenny's Ice Cream? Wow. Okay. All right. Go on.
Yeah. I think she's okay for me saying this. She describes herself as a sensualist, which I thought was real. You know, I don't know what I expected, but I thought that was so interesting. Like asking like, well, what does that mean? And it's really my favorite thing she told me. She was like, really, I make the ice cream so that you can get it in the store, like go into a Jenny store and get on a cone. Because she was like, go to a Jenny store on a date and get some ice cream on the cone, because like when she makes it in her mind, she's like, that's how she wants it to be eaten. Because she was like, you'll learn a lot about yourself and about your day if you two walk out of there eating ice cream on a cone. She's like, just think about it. It's a very sensual, you know, she was like, you're going to have some experience.
And
where that experience takes you or doesn't.
There are many ways to eat an ice cream cone.
Wow, Jenny is a freak. I live.
Oh, damn. I just thought it tasted good, but damn, girl, you know.
So, say, did you do that? Have you done that?
I've done that and it works. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow.
All right, so Zach, Saeed, and Sam, I think it's pretty clear that all three of you have strong opinions about food. You're thoughtful people who aren't afraid to tell folks what you really think, but I think also thoughtful people who are going to be able to give good advice. So we have some Sporkful listeners who reached out with food-related issues. You want to help them out?
Let's do it.
All right, we'll do that when we come back. Stick around.
It's time to open up a can of advertisements.
Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants: Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Recently, I went into my closet to try to get a collared shirt out, and it occurred to me that I don't think I have bought a new collared shirt in 5 years. I mean, every shirt in there was either really old, or it had some kind of perma-stain situation, or it probably never fit right in the first place. I gotta freshen up a little bit here. It's time for something new, right? And spring is coming. Now is the time if you've been looking to refresh your wardrobe, home, or skincare and beauty routines this season. Because, you know, Walmart has genuinely surprising style finds that don't break the bank. This spring, there's only one destination for the latest fashion, home, and beauty inspired by real life. Walmart. I freshened up my wardrobe. I got some nice dress shirts, a couple light hoodies. You know, you need light hoodies for the springtime. Very useful, very comfortable. Discover surprisingly stylish new season favorites at Walmart now, or shop it all on the Walmart app. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending. Now trending, your style at Walmart. I continue to get a lot of flack for my PB&J technique, okay? Jelly on the top, jelly on the bottom, peanut butter in the middle. That's the way to go. And the first thing people say is, well, when you spread the jelly on both sides and then spread the peanut butter on top, you're going to tear the bread. And my answer to you is, use better bread. Like Hero Bread. You get that whole wheat Hero Bread. It's got some grain. It's got some heft. It's got some flavor. It's got some texture. And it will stand up to my excellent PB&J technique. Hero makes delicious breads that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, but plenty of protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, a savory breakfast burrito, or a mouthwatering cheeseburger, you can have all that with Hero Breads. And let me tell you, we are a big burrito-eating family in our house. Breakfast burritos happen multiple times a week, and these Hero Flour tortillas are perfect for it. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, that's hero.co, and use code Sporkful at checkout for that discount. That's code Sporkful at hero.co. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you. Found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. On last week's show, I hung out with the founders of Ghetto Gastro, a Bronx-based culinary collective. These guys do all kinds of things. They host high-end events, they have a line of appliances, and they just put out a cookbook called Black Power Kitchen, co-written with Osai Endelin. Their mission is to show the world that Bronx culture is high culture. And when they decided to call themselves Ghetto Gastro, they chose that name very intentionally.
We're not trying to make the word ghetto seem cool and palatable to white people. It's really about, you know, rejecting necessary respectability politics within our own community, having an internal conversation like, yeah, we're black. Our food is a global food. It's a definitely a lot of ways to act black and be black. But we're going to bring you the unapologetic street side and still demand a premium, because for so long our culture has been extracted and the value's been extracted. But now it's time for us to capture the value.
After we spent some time chatting, the guys took me around the Bronx to some of the places that inspired recipes in their book. We had patties and coconut bread at Kingston Tropical Bakery, rotis at Feroz's, and green juice at Green Garden Juice Bar. It was all delicious. And I might have just found a new favorite hot sauce. Hear about it all in last week's episode, up now. All right, I'm back now with Zach Stafford, Sam Sanders, and Saeed Jones, host of the podcast Vibe Check. Hey, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, I think we have some folks joining our Zoom right now who have a food-related issue that needs mediation. Hello, hello. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Chris from Omaha, Nebraska, and this is my husband, Justin.
Hey.
Hey, Justin and Chris. Say hi to my friends, Saeed, Sam, and Zach.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hello.
Hi. Hello, hi. Hello.
What can we do for you today?
Okay, so let me just start by saying that Chris is a great cook. She makes us wonderful things. She's on online cooking lessons. She has magazines. She has tons of cookbooks. So the way I would sum this up, I guess, would to say that she's reluctant to do repeats. The way I think of her process is I try a new recipe. It's awesome and great. And then she throws the recipe away.
No, I don't throw it away. I often misplace it.
On purpose?
No, okay. No, not on purpose. No, I just got so much coming in at me and I want to try everything.
Yeah. Give me an example of one of the recipes that you felt was discarded too soon.
Well, okay. So a while ago, she made this butter chicken and it's just like a sort of a crock pot recipe. And it was awesome. I mean, she doesn't usually cook Indian type food. And so she was getting out of her comfort zone. But it was awesome. It was delicious. It was great. And then a couple of months went by and she says, do you want to have butter chicken again? I said, yeah, that'd be great. So she makes it again, but she uses a different recipe. So now it's still good, but it's a different dish.
Okay. Can I ask another follow-up question?
Sure.
What's the ratio of cooking? Does she always cook? Do you cook some too? How does that work?
I'd say it's probably 90-10 her. Okay. We both cook, but I got busy doing other things, so she sort of took on more of the responsibilities. And
but it sounds like, Chris, you enjoy cooking.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what am I going to make next? And then I'm reading, you know, we have a subscription to a cooking online class, and then all the magazines that are coming in, or we go out to eat, and I want to try to figure out how we had that dish at home. The other problem that he thinks is a problem is I don't mind leftovers.
Okay.
But I immediately pack up part of the food and take it to my dad because he lives attached to us and he's 84.
Oh.
He has really sad food at his house. So I'm trying to help him. So I'm like, then I can get it out of our refrigerator and then we can make something new.
Chris, just for clarification, so you can speak to this issue. Is he being honest when he says you never repeat recipes, or is it just certain dishes that he's talking about?
I am not good about repeating.
Okay.
I'm not.
So you self-identify as a non-repeater. Okay.
Yeah. Do you think you know why you don't want to repeat? So Chris, do you think you know why you don't want to repeat? What's behind that choice?
Just that I want to try this new thing that I've seen.
Yeah.
There's so many cool things to make or a different way to make it. And I'm just inundated with too much media, I think.
It's not like you're like, here's the buttered chicken. You're like, that was good, wasn't it? And then you like set the recipe on fire while he's eating it. It's got like a lot's going on. And then a few months, and I get it, like a few months later, for me, it would almost be, you know, I'm a writer, right? And so books and poems, and it would almost, tell me if this feels accurate. It's almost like you read a really great paragraph or a really great section of a poem, and then months later, you're like, where was that? And now you're walking all over the apartment and you can't find the right book. It's more that?
Yes, yes.
This is not my verdict, but a question. Have you, the husband, ever said, well, I like that recipe we had a month ago. I know she's not going to make it again, but I will. Have you ever done that?
I have not, because first of all, she's usually in control of the kitchen, and she made it the first time, so she'll be able to make it good the next time. Oh, you know, sometimes I'm just looking for the comfort of an old
you
friend.
You were mouthing
right?
something, Chris. What were I you said, mouthing? Say it out loud.
I said that was a little bit of a cop out.
Tell me more. Tell me more. I want to hear
like, I like where you're going. He could easily say, I'm going to make this now. Yeah. He could do that. Yeah, I like true. That right. idea.
Are we at the verdict part yet? Because I think
this is where you learn the three of us have three very different personalities. I'm like, is this a verdict kind of question? Yeah.
oh, I got a verdict, baby. I got a verdict.
Like, okay. Did you pull out a gavel? I guess I'm look, Chris has a gavel. I'm scared of you, Chris. Chris from Omaha. I guess I would say, Justin, what are you usually doing when Chris is cooking? Like, are you in the kitchen with her kind of being a part, you know, or?
Yeah, often I'm the sous chef.
Okay.
That happens a lot. Or I'm downstairs making cocktails.
Oh, okay.
She sends me off to do that a lot.
Okay. But Chris, tell me if this is accurate. So it's not like Justin's just like off hanging out or whatever. Like, it seems like he's a part of the cooking experience in one way or another.
A lot of, yeah, okay. most okay. of the time. Yeah.
All right.
I got some thoughts.
Go
go on, Sam.
I'm watching the body language here. Y'all clearly love each other very much.
No.
But more than you know, husband, you're kind of working your wife's nerves with this. I think you need to be a little more of an equal partner in the kitchen. And I think there's two things that I would suggest for you that will help solve your problem and give you some more agency to do some things yourself. You can be the keeper of the recipes.
That's what I was thinking.
If she's the lead chef,
yeah.
You can say, every recipe that I like, let me make it a point at the end of that meal, save the recipe.
Oh, I like that.
You can do that, right? And then you have them if you want to revisit. And the second thing you can do, because you know your way around the kitchen, if you really want a recipe again, you don't have to ask her to do it all the time. You could do it.
Okay.
Right?
Well, and how about we jointly do menu? That might work,
that
too.
If she wants to do that, too. Mm-hmm. But what I see here is that your wife is working harder than you think to feed not just the two of y'all, but also her dad. And I know, Chris, it seems like you enjoy this work, but it's work. And so if having to handle recipes in this way that you like more, husband, is more work for her, help do the more work. You can keep the recipes. You can perhaps take the initiative for a repeat one that you want, but you can lead more. I heard you at one point say that she has all the power in the kitchen. No. It's y'all's kitchen. You're in it too, right?
Well, that's fair. I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, very simply, I would say save the recipes that you like, and then don't be afraid to start a meal yourself.
Yeah, I agree. What I'm hearing is that Chris's joy, her relationship to cooking, is about the pursuit of the possible. It's a movement into the future. I just love the way your eyes lit up when you're like, there's just so many things out there to cook and to try. And that's so exciting. And I think how beautiful. I mean, one of, you know, a great relationship, I hope, does have a sense of propulsion, does have a sense of moving toward the possible. But also, I think what's really beautiful about relationship is finding a way, like you're saying, like saving the recipes so that we can look at the past, so that we can appreciate what we've built together. And so I think, one, practically, it would just be nice. And Chris, you know, would be like, oh, here's the actual recipe for the butter chicken from 3 months ago. Thank you. But also, I think with time, as you kind of compile this, I mean, it's like a love document. You know what I mean? That you can kind of look back on together. And that seems like a beautiful gift, but also a practical one that you can build together.
Yeah.
I love that. Zach, thoughts?
I mean, they've said everything. I agree so much. I think you both want to love each other. And that's what's so beautiful here, is that you're really trying to figure out the best ways to love on each other. And how do you also have your love show up in that love? And that's what I'm hearing from you, Justin, where you're saying, you know, well, she does this. You're trying to be respectful. You're like, I have my role and she has her role. But I think there's a space to come together and for you to also partake in the type of love that she's performing for you too. And you kind of do that for each other. Cause I mean, I'm the same way, Chris. Like, I want to do it all. I want to provide and provide. But when I learned to give my partner, you know, the whisk and the ladle and all these things to cook for me, we had a really magical relationship in the kitchen when it was, you know, two-sided, not just one-sided, me being head chef.
Yeah, I like this documentation aspect.
Yes. And the other thing I like about the documentation, and I say this as someone who's just gotten to the end of writing my first cookbook.
Yeah.
Thank you. And the first, it's really sort of the first time that I've been put in a position where I had to cook the same thing over and over again. And it does allow you to refine the recipe and make it your own. And that in itself is a rewarding process. Mm-hmm. So you cook it once and it's good. You cook it a second time, you make a tweak, and a third and fourth time, and you make a tweak, and then pretty soon it's Chris's special butter chicken.
Exactly.
There we go.
And that's also rewarding as opposed to just doing something new each time. So I think all these suggestions are great. The one thing I would add is I think that once a month, Justin should get to pick a greatest hit.
Oh, I like that.
Yes, absolutely.
And I would say
at least once a month.
Let Justin cook it too.
It may not be as great though. So
He's really good.
All right, we're gonna empower you, Justin.
I love
it. It'll be great.
All right. Well, Chris and Justin in Omaha, thanks so much for reaching out. We hope you enjoy all of your next dinners this week, whether they're new or repeats of some of the greatest hits.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for talking. Thanks, guys, for helping us out.
This is delightful.
This is great. Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
I think we have time to hear from one more person. This is a voicemail we received. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, we got this message from Judson in Washington, D.C.
Oh, my God.
Do you know Judson?
I'm at his wedding this weekend. Yeah, this is like, so funny. Oh, my God.
Is this our friend Judson?
Oh, okay. My God.
Okay.
That's funny. Okay,
now here's your friend Judson.
Hello, lovely ladies. This dispute stems from savage, beastly, downright shameful, and disgusting behavior related to eating a Chipotle bowl. Is it correct to eat a Chipotle bowl left to right, or should you, like a child sociopath / my partner, mix up the bowl, destroying all of its flavors to create something like a brothless Chipotle soup? Thank you for ultimately agreeing with me. Your friend, Judson, and yes, you may use my real name because I know that I am right. Bye,
Judson. I'm crying. And congratulations to Judson getting married to this person. Too. He is literally going to get married to this person.
Yeah.
Are they serving Chipotle at the wedding?
No, but something very similar. My sister served Chipotle at her wedding, by the way. But this wedding, they are not. But they should, because it's a good idea.
so just to make clear what the question is. So when you get a Chipotle bowl, they have the bowl, they put down a bed of rice, and then as you order your chicken, beans, salsa, whatever it may be, they kind of put those in clumps all arrayed next to each other. Mm-hmm. All those different things that you've chosen from the bar are not mixed together.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in small piles next to each other.
Oh, I know a Chipotle bowl very well. Yeah.
And what Judson is saying that he thinks it should be eaten left to right, or you could say around in a circle, but in any case, keeping the components separate to some degree, or should the whole thing be mixed together to get consistent ratios in every bite before you eat?
Are they sharing the bowl, or is it a bowl for him and a bowl for the partner?
Yeah, if I was sharing
that. I think
so
it's just
a bowl for him
bowl.
And the bowl for the partner, let him be.
I mean, that's grown. Number one. Let him be.
Let him be. My philosophy about food and how other people eat, never ever tell other adults how to eat, even if they're your partner.
Speaking for myself, to answer Judson's question, I wouldn't mix it all up just because I think that would look ugly.
Can I tell you my secret? I'm a mixer.
You're a mixer? That's what I can tell. We know you're a mixer, girl.
We could have told you
that's
that.
That's why this struck such a nerve with Sam.
I wouldn't tell someone else how to eat I agree. But I would personally, I don't like how it looks all mixed up. You know, I'm not a farm animal. I'm not just looking for feed. This is an experience.
Well, listen,
I'm
Babe the pig. I mean, take me to the trough. I'm okay with it.
Babe in the city. Sam Sanders. I mean, I agree.
Yes, Zach, let's
Let people eat how they want to eat. Chipotle bowls or how you want to eat them. Whatever. The God's tier way to eat a Chipotle bowl, which I learned from TikTok, is you flip it over and you eat it upside down from the aluminum. So you have all that stuff on the that's so on that top the and the bottom, and then you eat it that way.
That sounds good.
This it, really, what the fundamental question here is one that we have debated on the Sporkful going back more than a decade. It's the debate between bite consistency and bite variety. In some foods, you want all your ratios in every bite. You want bite consistency in some dishes. In other dishes, you want bite variety. You want that one piece of Jenny's ice cream that has the giant chunk of almond brittle because it stands out from the others. You don't want the same amount of crunch in every bite.
Because it depends. It's kind of like if I have dim sum, the pleasure of dim sum is kind of going, okay, what do I want next? What flavor, what texture do I want next? So I guess it's what you are looking for.
For me, the distinction is savory versus sweet. If I'm having savory food like a Chipotle bowl or pizza, I actually want bite consistency. I love when pizza toppings are arranged in a pretty uniform fashion. For a dessert or a sweet thing, I like the difference. Like the crust piece is like crispier than the middle piece, and I enjoy that. But for the savory main course of the meal, I actually want a uniformity. I know this is kind of weird and detailed, but that's my process.
I think that's great. Look, I don't think that there's necessarily a right or wrong. I agree. Like, generally, you know, I like to quote the Latin maximum, de gustibus non est disputandum. In matters of taste, there can be no dispute.
Okay.
And so, you know, I generally agree with you. People can have bright variety or bright consistency, whatever they want. I just think a lot of people aren't really thinking about it. And what I want to encourage people to do is at least stop and think about what it is that you want so that you make sure that you're getting it. That being said, I think that this debate gets to a larger philosophical question because, like, when you're eating a food with bite variety, some bites are going to be better than others.
Yes.
All right. To whatever your taste is. When you have that bite that's the most incredible bite that has all the ratios just so, it's like, let's say it's your third or fourth bite into the thing, and that bite stands out. It's very easy to spend the rest of that dish chasing that same bite.
Or I'll just stop right there. I'll be like, I can't beat that bite. We're good.
but it's sort of like, if everything could be perfect, would you want it to be?
Yeah.
No.
Like, if every bite could be the best bite, would you want it to be? But then every bite wouldn't be special. Yeah.
If every bite is perfect, eventually every bite is then mediocre because they're all exactly the same.
Yeah.
Y'all say that, but then I think about Jenny's brown butter almond brittle ice cream, and it feels like every bite is perfect, and I still think it's perfect.
I have two other things. One, Judson, and I will text Judson about this when we get off this conversation. So, bitch, if you want to be happy, you need to realize there's some things that are not worth you paying attention to. And I would argue your fiance husband.
On the week of his wedding, he has done this. Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, what is wrong with you?
Two, I feel like personally, whenever I have Chipotle, it's usually like I've just finished working out and like I'm almost like nearly lightheaded. Like I'm eating to survive is what I'm trying to say.
There you go.
So I'm like, I'm not thinking that much. Like to me, it's
this is not a Michelin star meal.
Got
just
it.
Eat it.
Chipotle is just something eat I eat. It's not necessarily like a meal, if that makes
there
sense.
There you go. There you go.
I will say my last note on this to Sam, if you mix it, because I'm not a big mixer, but if I did mix it, then that's when you order the chips and you use the chips to dip into your Chipotle bowl.
Oh. Okay,
you make then it becomes a Chipotle dip.
I like that. I like that.
I think there is a third way, which is that, you know, you could take a spoon and go around the bowl, get a little dab of guac, get a little piece of chicken, run it through the salsa, scoop it through the rice. That's one bite.
What is this? What is this? That's too much work,
Then you can... It's not work. It's a game, Sam. This is it's the pursuit of excellence. Zach, you're going to understand this, Zach. You're my fellow type A overachiever, right? Like, it's fun to take this bowl and be like, I'm gonna see how many different bites I can create.
Damn.
And I'm going to figure out what my favorite one is. And by the time I'm about halfway through, I will have tried all the different best combinations. Then I'll have zeroed in on the best ratio and the best order in which to scoop the
y'all see the world differently than me.
I agree. I agree so much with Dan. And this also brings me to tie it back to ice cream, something that we didn't talk about, which is what I do. And I don't know if others do, but when you start eating a pint of ice cream, it's really cold. And as you start eating it, it starts to melt. When it begins to melt, then you start mixing it and make it more of like a frosty texture. And it becomes a different type of
ice cream. When my ice cream starts to get cold, I put it back in the freezer for 20 minutes to get it cold again. I want it. Rock
Sam wants perfection.
I think y'all both are doing too much. When it starts to melt, I say, eat faster, bitch. Scoop, scoop. Keep it moving.
All All right. Well, poet and writer Saeed Jones, journalist and Tony Award-winning producer Zach Stafford, and journalist and podcaster Sam Sanders together, they are the hosts of the podcast Vibe Check. Thank you all so much for joining me and for helping to wade through some of these thorny issues.
Dan, I learned so much about us today.
It's amazing. Literally.
Group therapy.
I am shaking.
Hey, if you're new to our show, please take a minute right now and connect with us in your podcasting app. You can hit subscribe or heart or favorite or like or plus, whatever the thing on our page in your podcasting app is to connect, to hang out with us more often. Please press it right now while we're talking. That's awesome. Next week on the show, I talk with the one and only Bill Nye, the science guy. If you're making pasta and you salt the water, does the salt make the water boil faster? Bill will tell us that and much more. That's next week. While you wait for that one, check out my conversation with the co-founders of the Bronx-based culinary collective Ghetto Gastro, up now where he got this one. This show is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andres O'Hara.
Editing by
Nora Ritchie.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Colin Anderson and Nora Ritchie. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Shannon in Tomball, Texas, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.